So now it's time to get aggressively stupid.
Yes.
And have fun a little stuff. Fun. So I'm sure that all of you went by the racetrack earlier in the past 3 days, and we've had quite a crew of overly dedicated people who are out there writing code for their slot cars.
Right.
And if any of you were there late yesterday, it got to be quite a zoo as people were really, really, really getting into, they wanted to be in the top three.
Right. So the idea here is that they wrote, the contestants were able to write hard real-time code to read the sensors in the track, set the track voltage, and try to get their car around as fast as possible. And the greatest thing is that, as John Gage mentioned, is that we have three high school students and a college freshman from Germany that formed the team that are here because they won a programming contest in Germany. They won a free trip to Java 1, and they've got third place. Now we're going to bring all the contestants up now, and they're going to have a runoff one by one.
All right.
Okay, there they go.
All right.
Okay. They got to go around twice for a full lap. They're going to make it.
All right, twice around. These things are almost always a lot more fun when they wipe out, but...
Look at it.
These guys look like they're going to make it. All right.
Okay, we'll give Robert a try. Yeah.
So now we've got Robert Chu. So a lot of the science in this is picking the car. They were going through, like, which car should we use?
There we go.
Peter Whitfield. So one of the things that was fun last night was we did a dry run of this, and everybody was using their hot tuned versions, and every car splatted. And so they spent until about midnight last night, kind of detuning things a little bit, so that they would they wanted to actually make it around the track. But we need to get a good splat here, so Peter, it's up to you to splat properly. Up here. So we've got one last thing, and that one starts with a video. So can we roll the video? Hi.
Hi, James.
So this is Paul Perrone and his best friend Tommy. Tommy is one of the DARPA Grand Challenge cars. So tell us about Tommy and how he works.
Sure. Well, it's an autonomous ground vehicle, in our case, a robotic dune buggy. So what I figure I'd show you first is the equipment box where all of Tommy's main processing.
The part that actually matters.
Right, the brain power. So the equipment box is mounted on a bunch of little airbags, which damps its ride when it's taking some, going through bumpy terrain. And it's also got an air conditioning unit in it to keep it cool. So I'm gonna turn these batteries off. So the main thing that we have in here is that everything runs on a single microprocessor. We run Java SE, a single process on this for all the artificial intelligence and decision making. All the sensor fusion, navigation, and obstacle avoidance is done on this platform here.
And that's just a stock board. Stock off-the-shelf stuff.
$200 processor card.
$200 processor card. I mean, a lot of this actually looks like it's a Home Depot special.
That's fairly accurate, correct.
Which is actually pretty amazing, right? I mean, this is a very credible car that actually got some very nice numbers in the trials.
Mm-hmm, correct.
So you don't just have Java in there. You've got some other processor boards here.
Correct. We run Java ME on these two microcontrollers here, and this is where all the real-time closed-loop feedback control takes place for actually controlling the actuators, the steering servo, the shifter, the throttle, the brake, and we get low-level vehicle information such as RPM, throttle position information, tachometer readings, and what have you.
So these do all the low-level stuff with interacting with like the brake pedal and all the rest of that. They're just basic off-the-shelf JSTAMP boards.
Correct. Right.
I mean, a lot of the throttle actuators look like they were a little bit of fun hacking.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
And fun destroying, because we've had to replace them numerous times during testing.
Yeah, I'm sure you've been through at least one engine swap, I know.
Oh yeah.
When one of these things hits a concrete wall at 80 miles an hour, it's interesting.
Yes.
Makes for good video. I hope you've all seen that one. So where does the data come from for this thing?
We've got an array of GPS antennas up top here. We have sub-meter positioning resolution with our primary GPS antenna up top. And then we've got antennas that gather inertial navigation information to give us orientation of the vehicle, such as heading, roll, and pitch.
So you're doing essentially differential GPS on top of the one platform to do the roll and pitch stuff?
Correct. Actually, we've got a quadruple redundant GPS configuration where we get line of sight differential from a satellite. If that goes out, we get beacon-based GPS. If that goes out, we use plain GPS. If that goes out, we get dead reckon based on tachometer readings. So multiple ways to calculate our position.
Right, and these are all like off-the-shelf boxes that you bought. I mean, the little heading one that you've got a little box in there. I'm sure you didn't go down to like Orchard Supply to to buy that little box, but it was a pre-built.
Right, CSI Wireless, they provide these the GPS and the inertial nav unit, yeah. And these are pretty high end devices.
Right, so up in the front we've got the eyes of the beast, and of course when I first saw this thing I thought it was like a bumper.
this is the radar unit. This sees out about 500 feet. It's not very precise, though, so we use this as sort of an early warning system to slow the vehicle down if we think there's something out ahead. The primary way that we detect obstacles are using these SICK LMS laser radar units that we have one down here. We also had one up here as well. But these send out a laser beam up to 250 feet, and every 0.25 degrees along a 180 degree arc, we get range information back to tell us that there's something out there, the shape of the object, so that we know to avoid it.
Right. So in this, for this particular race, nobody actually needed vision because you weren't following like lines in the road or anything like that.
Correct. Some folks did have stereo vision, but the SICK LMS was used on the vast majority of the vehicles.
Right. So that gives you just sort of a one-dimensional sort of model of how far things are away from you. You're following the waypoints and you just go.
Right, you're basically detecting positive obstacles or bumps in the way of the vehicle. And you also can detect negative obstacles like ditches and perhaps cliffs by, we had a laser radar angled up here to sort of see down to give us an early warning that we might be heading off of a cliff.
So heading off a cliff, which would be bad.
Yeah, I imagine. We'd have to do a significant refactoring to handle that one.
Yeah, yeah. Or refactorying.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, the design of this machine, was kind of a backyard thing. But it's a really elegant piece of engineering because it's really pretty simple, right? I mean, there's, you've got just what you need to get the job done. Right, you've got the simple vision system, which is not so simple, but you know, it's an off-the-shelf vision system. You've got the basic positioning stuff, and all coming together in the data collection and analysis harness.
We are basically trying to demonstrate what we could do faster and cheaper. We spent about $60,000 on this project, 10 months of software development time, and ran, like I said, everything on a single microprocessor, which demonstrates that, you know, Java really, you know, can live up to its performance promise. We were able to do just an incredible amount of processing on that processor, just with a single JVM.
So was it like heavily loaded, lightly loaded, or you?
It was heavily loaded. We actually architected the system considering three processors, but we ultimately started to load this single processor down. We're fusing all of this data, doing all of our route planning, online route planning, and all of our obstacle avoidance, and we just never reached a limit. So we figured, well, let's stick with the single microprocessor.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can get away with when you're not trying to do sort of 3D physics in a video
right.
game.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's a next generation with their next contest.
Right. Tommy 2, bigger, better, meaner. We're gearing up for the next grand challenge, the Urban Challenge, to be held in 2007. And this operation, as the name implies, is in an urban zone where you have moving traffic. You have to merge with traffic, navigate traffic circles, parallel park, detect the lines in the road. You have to obey traffic laws.
So just a bump here. Who's going to be driving the other cars?
Well, the interns.
The interns. Good answer. Good answer. So it'll be another big notch up, right? I mean, the having vision systems is not easy.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we're still going to have to. We're building upon a significant base of what we already have here. I mean, you still have to navigate. You still have to have obstacle avoidance, control of the motors, the closed loop feedback control, and then we have to layer on top of that the vision information that tells us where the lines of the road are, whether the traffic light is green or red, things like that.
Yeah, one of the things that I found interesting in talking to people who do AI is that Java actually works surprisingly well for AI. Because if you go back, 30 years, all the AI guys were doing Lisp. And the thing about Lisp is that it deals with really tight, interconnected data structures. And that's really, what garbage collection does. That's what garbage collection was invented for. And in a lot of these analysis tasks actually work really well in the Java world. I mean, a lot of the folks in the video game business that have been doing Java, they sort of got started down the Java road just because it makes the AI engines easier. So you got something like this that's really heavy on the AI. It actually works pretty smoothly. So what do you think you learned from this? What are sort of the messages that you?
Well, the main message is sort of just this whole long process of over a year working with this vehicle, we're trying to sort of, in the story of Tommy, how it, tried to avoid obstacles along the way and ultimately didn't win the race, but we've gone on to do other bigger, better things. So we sort of model our lives after the robot, and that, when you have obstacles in your way, you can find alternate paths to goals. May not be the original goal, but maybe other better goals.
And you have to be really, really persistent.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always thought.
And vigilant. Always have your hand ready on that e-stop button.
Yeah. 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 He's got a great story about the emergency switch button that didn't get pressed. So anyway, thanks a lot, Paul.
Thank you, James. Thanks.
Thanks
much.
A lot. So Tommy is pretty grand. So I'm now, about done. I've sort of done my bit. I really have only one call to action for you folks, and that is forget the box. Right? All of you are engineers. You're all building stuff. It's really easy to sort of get into the into the task that you're doing, and never sort of pop your head up and ask yourself, well, what else is interesting in the landscape? And a lot of what we've seen this morning is folks who have sort of connected things together in kind of unusual ways, right? I mean, this is basically a single board PC with wheels. There's the cell phone as an embedded controller. There's all kinds of stuff that you can do. I mean, the real-time system that we were doing that was originally targeted at, you know, high-performance, you know, critical real-time systems turns out to be really great to run an app server on. So think about what you're doing, where you're going, and get out of the box, because there's a, you know, there's a lot of landscape out there, and have a lot of fun doing what you're doing. And you know, there's so much stuff in the Java space that is sort of outside of what you're working on, that you've got a lot of freedom and a lot of time and a lot of you know, acreage to go wandering around. So that's it for me, and back to you, John. Thanks a lot.